I'm Carl. I'm an alcoholic. Teresa just informed me she forgot to do how it works. Do we want to do that?
We know how it works.
Okay. What I'd like to say first is that I'm very honored to be up here, and that I was asked to come up here and tell my story tonight. And also very honored that Teresa was the one that introduced me. And also my sisters are here tonight. Well, I'm going to get started here. I already told it to God while I was going to the bathroom. I was born here in Houston, Texas. Is he going to shut up now? And I'm the one that's telling the story. I was born in June of 1955. June 23rd. Matter of fact, Terry G and I share the same exact day. Sorry, Terry, I told your age. No, 1955. Same thing. At any rate, I just left. I was at my sister's house a while ago. My brother is in from Austin. I don't get to see him very often. He's a politician, and well, rarely. And I forget what he said something to the fact that there was a picture in the bedroom. I was looking at some pictures in her bedroom, and I said, "Oh, there! I never saw this picture of Mom, and it was with my sister's dad, my oldest sister's dad." And her brother goes, it's something about, I said, "Well, there's a picture of Mom too. Who is that?" She goes, "That must be another one of her boyfriends, or who knows, or what." You know, I was like, "Ron." But my mother married and had two children, my oldest brother and my sister. And since she got divorced, and she was pregnant in the midst of that divorce, which we don't know who her father is. That's still questionable. It doesn't matter. But she was put up for adoption, and my oldest brother and sister went to live with their father. And then my mother met my father, whom she had me and my sister Gina, who now is in recovery also. She's got 2 years younger than I do, and my younger brother. And so my father and my mother divorced when I was about 6 years old. All of us were kind of separated, scattered. I didn't even really know I had an older brother and sister until I was like, I don't know, a few years old or something. We'd see them. But it just, you know, when you're a kid, I guess you're in your own world. You don't, you know, you're not really thinking much about it. And at any rate, we were all kind of separated and scattered, and I'd live with my mother, and then I'd live with my father, and I'd live with my mother, and I'd live with my father, and I went back and forth. I was one of these problem children. And run away from school all the time. And, my oldest sister came to live with my mother and my sister and I when she was like 16. And so then I was jealous of her because she was getting to drive a car and I wasn't getting to drive no more, and we used to fight. Then I go back and live with my father. And when I turned 15, Cheryl, by that time, she had already she was got married, I guess. I don't remember now. And she was pregnant and moved out from Mom's, and Gina was left with Mom and I went to live with Dad. And then that was in 69 or 70, I can't even remember that. But in 1970, I was living with Dad, and my mother took her life. And I was 15, and Gina was 13. She was living with mother. She was an alcoholic and a drug addict. My father is an alcoholic and a drug addict in denial. That was real hard for us. And then Gina came to live with my father and I, and we drank, you know. And Dad didn't care if you drank, as long as you drank at home. My first marijuana joint he gave me. My first speed pill he gave me. He used to give all my friends speed pills, you know, little white crosses, so they could drive cars to San Antonio. And I knew I had a drinking problem when I was like 16 years old. I wrecked my first car when I was 16. I hit a right there on 16, I hit this woman. I must have been doing 80, they said, in the rear, and skidded all the way down the embankment. And there was this boy with me. He hit his head on the windshield. I remember that. We didn't wear seatbelts then. I was driving some big ass 72 Oldsmobile, long ass on this. And I mean, just totaled that whole front end of that car. And I'm steady trying to get away and put it in drive, trying to go. And this guy says, this car is not going anywhere, and you cannot hit and run. You need to stay. So I called my sister to come get me because my father was out of town. She's all screwed up on Downers or something, and they're to get killed walking across the freeway. And they're like, who's this person? I said, hell, I don't know who she is. I didn't want nobody to know she's my sister. And, you know, and so that's the kind of life. I mean, we were constantly drinking, and my father was drinking, and he was one of these people, his pistol-packing guy, you know. Your friends come over, and you're like, don't sit there. There's a pistol underneath that pillow. You know? And why is there foil on your windows? Well, my dad's kind of paranoid, you know. So, and you know, and I was always getting at my ass in trouble. And Gina lied. She'd stick with a damn lie. And she'd go, why do you tell the goddamn truth? Just lie. And I told both of them one night I was sneaking out. I was just sneaking out to see my boyfriend. My dad said, he used to threaten me all the time. And, you know, you better not screw him. I'm going to have you check, you know. Is that hard to believe or something? Wait till you hear the rest of this story. So anyway, I told him, I said, look, Dad comes back, he told him I went riding. So I get back, and of course Dad set me up, he leaves and he comes back, and of course I get back and got all my little Christmas presents, my boyfriend got me, you know. And he goes, where you been? So I've been out riding. I said, you're a goddamn liar. I said, yes sir, I am. So he gets mad at my sister, and she gets in trouble, or gets slapped, I think, or something. And she goes, damn you, Carla, if you're going to tell us a lie, then you got to stick with it. Because the way he always knows when I'm lying, I can't. You know? So my father always knew exactly what I was doing, when I was doing it. It used to piss me off. But, you know, I don't know. He just always trapped me. So, anyway, so, I mean, later on, when I became like 19, I think I was, or 20, my first lover, we was at my dad's, and there was this big ruckus that happened at the car lot. There was always a ruckus. It was always, always a ruckus. You know what I mean? When I say ruckus, I mean like, you know, a pistol right now. You know, who's going to shoot who? And And this little old gal or something came down to from Dallas or something to look me up. And anyway, we was all there at the car lot. She said something about to my lover that she'd come down here to see me or something. Anyway, they got into a fight. And my dad freaked out. And then my first lover tells my dad that that's how he found out right then and there that I was, that we were lovers. And he looked at me and he said, all you need is a good, I'll let you fill in the blank. I don't want to say that. My sister said that cut too much. And I said, you know, Dad, that's pretty funny. You know, you were threatening me if I did do it. Now you're telling me I need to go do it. I said, but by the way, when I turned 19, I took that whole year and decided to try everything. So don't worry, I've had it all. And I did. When I was 19 years old, that was probably the wildest year of my life. I was up in Dallas. I lived next door to some people that, I mean, they were using the Bible as like toilet paper or something. They were just completely out there. I guess I was too. I was the social sleeper. And there was a couple of gay guys there, and they said, honey, we're going to take you to a gay bar. And they did. And then I had a ride. And that was in Dallas, Texas. So, and I've lived in Dallas a few times. Every time I get mad here in Houston, I take off, go to Dallas. So that's when my life began, basically. When I was 19 years old, I was away from Dad, and it really took off for me there. And I really, my drinking from the age of 16 all the way up, I remember it was just extreme. It was really, really extreme. And I was a blackout drinker. I wrecked a lot of vehicles, and I'm very lucky to be even standing here. Very lucky. I had a lot of fears, I had a lot of dreams, I had a lot of nightmares, and the reason why I'm saying that it's important to my sobriety, why I'm sober today, is because later, I just drank and drank and drank and drank. And partied in the 70s, the 80s, early 80s. Lots of drinking. I managed to keep jobs. I started in the automotive business, in the dealerships when I was 21 years old. And I had good jobs, and I was good. I was rated one of the best parts people, I was a workaholic too. And that made me who I was. My job was who I was. And if I had a title to go with it, that was who I was. And if I had a lover to go with it, that's who I was. Without those things, I was nobody. My mother, when she died, that was a big traumatic thing for me. I always had dreams of her. My Gina was living in California, and we're like, 22 months? Dad always knows that. I don't know that. 22 months or something apart. We're not quite 2 years. And I worried about her. She worked at Harris Casino in Lake Tahoe. And she'd get drunk, call me, and I'd get drunk, I'd call her. This was 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. We'd be crying about mother. I mean, we're adults, for God's sake, And we're still doing this shit. And I worried about her getting killed. She worried about me getting killed. Anyway, I want to tell y'all about this dream I had. Because it's bizarre. First of all, I'm definitely scared of airplanes. I'm scared of heights. Why is that a fear of getting killed in a damn airplane? It took everything I had to go see her in Tahoe. I mean, I was drunk the whole time. You kept thinking planes are coming at you. You know, you see those little lights down there at the end of the wing, and I thought, kept thinking it was a plane coming at me. I was panicking. You know, I kept wanting to say something, and I thought, no, I'm going to make a fool of myself. But at any rate, I had this. I lived in Spring, Texas. I used to drive from 2920 all the way over to I-10 and Gary Ashford. And I had this dream of this plane exploding in the air. You know, I could see it. You know, just the flames and everything. And I woke up and I was just soaking wet, sweating, you know, scared. And, man, that was bad. That was a bad nightmare. Well, it was storming outside when I woke up. And I lived in a trailer, Sally. Trailer trash. It was thundering and lightning real bad. Well, I got in the shower to get ready for work that morning, and I lost all the power. So I had to hurry up, get ready, you know, drive that far. And on the radio on the way to work, they said that certain roads were blocked off by Hooks Airport. There had been a plane crash. I didn't think nothing about it. And then I hear this lady on the radio calling in. You know how they call in, talk to the DJ? And she's hysterical. And she's telling this DJ that she saw this plane hit this power line and it exploded. Well, at that moment, it tripped me out. Because you see, the dream that I had was before we lost the power. When I was in the shower, that's when the power actually went out. So the dream happened before the airplane crash. And that's when she described that, it's exactly what I dreamed. So it blew my mind. That scared me even more about airplanes. But anyway, the point to that I want to make is that I started having, you know, my drinking, you know, kept progressing and progressing. And meanwhile, I quit smoking. I quit smoking a year before I got sober. So my drinking really escalated. And I kept having, one time I had this talk with God. I was on the floor. You know those hangovers? You know when you're telling God, I won't do this no more. And I was like, okay, God, you know you're doing that thing. I know y'all been there. You're a liar if you say you haven't. And I'm like, okay, God, if this is all happening to me, because you know how everything happens to you and you have the cloud over you and all the shit happens. If this is happening to me, I'll give up being gay. I don't need no women in my life. I'll be celibate. It don't matter. You know? And then all of a sudden, this voice was like, it's the drinking. Drinking? And it was like, drinking? I mean, like, wait a minute. I'm not like giving out women. What am I drinking? I was willing to give that up before drinking. You know, don't take my beer away, okay? I was one of those drinkers and got to confess because we used to drink together. I always had my beer. And I even had this little armadillo koozie. It had a little tail, you know, a little furry thing. And I took my beer with me everywhere.
So that's in the back of my mind about this drinking shit. So then you start seeing the commercials on TV, you know, those commercials about the drinking shit. And I'm like flipping to the damn channel because shit's on my mind. So I got invited to a little barbecue one Sunday. And it was an ex of mine and her lover. And there was people over there. And I got shit-faced just as usual. I mean, I always got shit-faced. I was kind of, when you went in the bar, my head was laying on the table, and they'd be going, you need to go home, go sleep. Or you'd find me in my car, somebody, one of my friends, they didn't want to go home, so they'd throw me in the car. I'm drunk, and my lover and I are having fights, and because I'm always drunk. And I was having affairs on her. I was terrible. And they said, "Party, you need to stay here tonight. This is on Highway 6 in Clay Road. And I lived in Spring off 2920. And I used to take the back roads down, tailgate and all that. You do not tell me what to do. And especially when I'm drunk. I'm alright. I'm going to drive home. Girl, you know you can't drive home. You need to stay here. No, I'm driving home." So one more time, I'm driving home. You know, and too many times I've driven that long ride. You know, one time I was driving down 45 and I always went to the left. I pass out, go to the left, you know. And somebody, evidently I got too close to them and they hit my door. Somebody must have, you know, like tried to hit me or something. I don't know what happened. But they hit my door glass and the whole damn thing came in on me. And I thought somebody was shooting at me, so I pulled my gun out and started shooting at them. I went all the way down 45, Esty Greens Road, into some apartments. When I couldn't find them no more, I came to and said, "What the fuck am I doing?" You know, my gun was empty. And I got home and I told my lover then, I said, "Man, I gotta quit carrying that gun with me." Not a clue to stop drinking. You know, it's never about not drinking. But anyway, I was going home again. And I made it in a blackout all the way, from Highway 6 to Clay Road, all the way past 2920, right down the road from my trailer park, and wake up in a damn ditch of water. Let me back up. I forgot to tell you about the dream. I had another dream that I saw myself in a blackout, going off a bridge into water, okay, prior to this. And I'm also scared of drowning. I think I'm scared of just everything. Anything I don't have control over, I'm scared of. So, when I come to, I'm in this ditch of water about this far from a tree. And I am so damn drunk, I open the door, fall in this ditch of water and mud and shit, and these two guys come up. "So you need some help?" I said, "Yeah, man, pull me out of here." They said, "We ain't got nothing. We'll give you a ride. We'll give you a ride home." I said, "No, man, just pull me out." So I go and I get this little thin rope. It's about, and I tie it on my bumper. And they said, "That ain't gonna. That's not gonna do it." I said, "Just do it. Just back up." And they say, "I don't care, do it, just prove it to her." So they back up, the rope pops, of course. I was like, "Okay, whatever. Just give me a ride home." So they give me a ride home. I don't call my sister in Tomball. I don't call my brother, who lives right around the corner. I call Gina in California. "I just had a wreck." Then she goes, "Hang up, I'm calling Bud." So she calls him. He calls my sister, and here they all come. Tell me to shut up and get in the, shut up, sit down. And I had crumpled all in that mud and water. And my brother, you know, this still amazes me to this day. It's just like, I remember I was just so drunk and just like, wow, that was smart. You know, he puts my tailgate down. He walks in the back of the truck and steps over and he don't get wet. And I was like, why didn't I do that? I'll never forget that. I was just like, damn. Because I was just like, I had all over me. So, they pull me out, take me home, and I'm bitching at my sister the whole time telling her she's not driving my truck right. And this is my other sister. Well, I left this part out. The adopted sister, she found us in 1980, by the way. And this is who I'm talking about. But she's very much part of our life today. Anyway, and her husband stands about 6'4", I think he is, and my sister's 5'1". 5'1", 5'2". She's a little big thing. And she told me to shut up. And I called her the next morning because I'd gone out to my truck to get in it to drive it, and it wouldn't move. And I couldn't figure out what the hell was wrong with my truck because I'd forgotten. And I called her and I said, what in the hell did you do to my truck? And she proceeded to bitch my ass out. I mean, it was 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday night. Okay, it's Monday morning, I need to go to work. And I smell like shit, look like shit. My truck's out there with mud and shit all underneath it. Transmission lines are dangling. There's no transmission put in. I got to call a wrecker one more time. There's many of these stories throughout my drinking, okay? Many. And on the way from there to work with that, with my truck on the back of that wrecker, I was one more time praying. I was scared to talk to God, you know, because I broke so many promises. So I didn't even want to say it. I didn't even want to say that I was not going to do this again. But something happened. Because I was scared. Because you know that dream that I had where I saw myself going off, and then the dream before that with the airplane, and then it really happened? I felt like God was telling me something. Like, it's not going to be a ditch of water the next time. It's not going to be just barely missing the tree. And I really believed with that, and I still believe to this day, that if I drink, I will die. He has saved me too many times. So, my drinking friends said, Carla, you got a problem. Is there? You need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, man, I don't want to go there. And I said, well, they got this AAA. So, I looked it up. This was in April of 1988. And I went to Lambda. I do not remember, okay? I don't remember. I don't even remember picking up my desire chip. I got one. But I don't remember. I think I was just in so much fog and so much fear. It's just unbelievable. But I was upset the fact that you guys didn't have signs on the door to tell me what time the meeting started and where it was and what it was, because I just wouldn't ask anybody. And so it took me 9 months. See, everybody was talking about their first roundup was in 88. Everybody was talking. They're my sobriety buddies. And I didn't go, my first roundup was in 89. Because I didn't go to that many meetings in the first 9 months of my sobriety. I was hit and miss them, so I didn't really know that much about it. So my first roundup was in 1989. And because my first Thanksgiving, sober Thanksgiving and Christmas, was with my sisters and my family. So, in 1988 what is it, 12 years ago? I got pretty desperate. My friends, my real good friends, didn't invite me to the Christmas thing. And I came up to Lambda in December. And I saw a girl there that had been at the Christmas party the year before. And that's how it all started for me. She introduced me to people. And you know, people come in and out of our lives in this program. Because the two people that were there for me, they don't come to meetings anymore. And it doesn't matter. You know, they came to meetings three, four, five, I mean, every day, sometimes two, three meetings a day. And then for some reason they quit going. And they played a big part in my life then, because it took me up to my fourth year before I could really even talk, you know, believe it or not. I was pretty shy back then. I think it was more scared, not shy, but scared. And what I want to tell you is that I have literally grew up in these rooms. And every year, Thanksgiving, I want to be here. And I mean, I love my sisters. We are all we got, as my sisters and my two brothers. But I mean, you guys mean so much to me. And it's hard for me to explain that to them, but it doesn't, you know, it's like, you know, when I hear the word trust, I don't use the word trust. I like to use the word safe. It's just my way. I feel safe in here. Okay? Not that I trust y'all. I mean, we're fucking human beings, okay? But I feel safe, y'all, because when we're talking to each other, there's a connection, because that's one thing I know that we can all talk about is getting sober. We know that. And like Teresa, you know, what I like about Teresa is that she loves AA. And that's what I look for in people, is that they love AA. You see, I absolutely love it. Okay, and the reason why I say that is because it saved my life. It saved me as being who I am. It let me grow up. AA, the fellowship, you know, watching you, dressing like you at times when I was early in sobriety. Oh, it's okay if I put an earring in my ear, okay? You know, and when I did my third step, you know, at the time I really didn't have a sponsor at that particular time. I was just so desperate and so scared, because when I came in here, they said stuff like, you know, not everybody's going to be in this room. There's only going to be just very few of us left and to stay sober, and that scared the shit out of me. I really wanted to do it this time. And you know, and they said, you know, you're only as sick as your secrets. And I remembered, okay, what secrets do I have? And so I ran, I called Gina. I gotta tell you this. Yeah, something when I was 5 years old or something, you know. And she was like, yeah? And you were holding that? I'm like, whatever. Just let me get it out. And that was another thing that I learned. And then the thing was turning my life over to God. And I heard that. And I was so scared to do that. I just knew God was going to turn me into something else, you know. And I remember doing that with myself, by myself, because I really wanted to stay sober. You know, I see a lot of people come in and out of these programs. And I have been coming to meetings for the whole fucking 12 years. And I was just talking about this the other night. I was telling somebody that I told Teresa, I said, I was coming up on 10 years. And I said, I come up there and I was in a bad place. I don't remember what the deal was. I told Teresa, I said, I'm so fucking tired of coming to these damn meetings. Been coming up here for 10 damn years and blah, blah, blah. And I said, I don't even know what else to do. Go to a damn meeting. And she said, Carl, just calm down. She said, you're coming up on 10 years. You're not eating. Have you eaten? She always asks me that. Have you eaten? But I always want to feed you. And she will feed you. You know, she tells things like, you know, you need to eat. Have you rested? Blah, blah, blah. You know, go hit your knees. Go take a bath. Well, I don't take baths. Well, whatever. Go take a shower. But, you know, I'm just miserable. But what I'm getting at is that all I knew was to go to a meeting because that I have made AA my life. And I know we get burned out on it sometimes. You know, and the thing that I heard in there a lot was balance. You know, and so I don't know how to do fucking balance. But, you know, I mean, I try to go to... You know, I try to go to three to, you know, I still go three, sometimes five meetings a week. You know, it's important to me. And it's, you know, it's like, it's kind of like going home, you know. When you get off work, you go home, don't you? Well, I go to a meeting. I mean, it's just part of my life. And so therefore, when you get in a bad place, guess where you go? And then somebody's going to call you on your shit. And I ain't going to name any names in here. But they told me, oh, you're fucking nuts. You're insane. And I've been told that by a lot of friends of mine. And you know what? I don't rear back and hit them. Just because they tell me that. Because, you know, I know they care. And, you know, there's so much. I mean, you know what? There's just so much. There's so many stories about Lambda. But, you know, I mean, I'm standing outside one time, and I was worried about somebody liking me. Who the hell knows? This is quite a few years ago. I must have had, oh, I don't know, 5 years, 4 years, who knows? And they said, Carla, why don't you concentrate on people who do like you? You know? Why don't you give them your time? You know, and that really hit home with me. You know, I don't have any idea who said that to this day, but, and then there's people that have said some things that touched my heart, you know, and I'm gonna stand up here and I'm gonna admit this now, you know, that I have had conversations with people in my early sobriety. I'm gonna say it's been lately, because it's not true, but in my early sobriety, when I say early, I mean under five, and I don't mean to demean anybody, but you know. That was hard for me those first 5 years. That I was so into myself that when people talked to me and I would hear them talking and saying, you know, I had this wonderful conversation with Carla outside. I felt about this fucking big because I didn't remember. And I'm going to tell y'all that. And I don't know who it was. And if you out there, you know, I apologize. But that really hit home with me, and that's when I began to understand self-centeredness. And I always want, you know, there's a lot of people in here, like Teresa T, you know, and DJ, you know, and Barbara. I mean, they give. And I admire that in them, that they're giving people. You know, they take time out for newcomers and... I'm not so graceful at that all the time. I have learned to reach out, you know, and I would like to do better at that. I'm kind of, you know, I'm not one of these people who run up and hug you. Don't take it personal, it's just me. People always say, can I hug you? And then the people that know me don't even hesitate, you know, because, I mean, I love my sponsor, you know, I mean, I feel like I'm like her, you know, she might look gruff and she'll call you on your shit, but you know, she's the most fantastic person, and she's a very giving person, and cares, you know, and that's what I love and look for in people, who truly love other people, you know, and that are honest. And when I say honest, I don't mean like, you know, I mean, you know, honesty with, you know, that you're doing the best you can, you know, because we all do the best we can. And there's no right way or wrong way to do this program. It's progress. Not perfection. And I've had to tell myself that over and over because I will beat myself up. Especially when you get time. You know, because we're not supposed to act like that. And I don't want what they have. Well, you know what? All we have is one day that we didn't fucking drink. Okay? That's all I got. Somebody said something to me once, I don't know, a long time ago, and I said, I'm not going to say every word, but don't put me there. I'll fuck up just as soon as you say it. Because I'm human. And I get nuts. I didn't ever think that I would do what y'all did. I'd be sitting there feeling good about myself. You know, had a lover. Had a good job. Somebody lost their job. Oh, that's real bad. You know, that shit ain't gonna happen to me. Well, guess what? You know, and then next thing you know, you broke up with your lover. You know, you see them, but that ain't gonna happen to me. I'm in a good place. Boom. And every time you judge somebody, guess what? It happens to you. I've learned every bit of that right here. If you have decided you want to get sober, do you truly want to get sober? This ain't bad life. It's a wonderful life. I never think that I could enjoy activities being sober. I didn't think that I thought it was gonna be boring. You know, and you look back and you just keep sitting on my back porch with a 6-pack of beer. Talking about what I was going to do for the next 5 years. That was fun. You know, or your friends telling you what we did last time, and because you don't remember, or you're scared to ask. You know, this is the way to go. You know, and I can look at people and see people drinking and think, boy, that beer would taste good or whatever. But does it really? Or is that all up here? I think it's all up here. I wish I could give everybody this program and you keep it. And it hurts to see your friends go out. And then you don't see people come around for a while. Or the personalities do come before the principles. And it happens. And we all, you know, we change in here. We change tremendously, love. Or lately. I ain't been right. And the support, alright. I know you know I ain't right. But I mean, I mean, with myself. I've wore my poor therapist out. But the support that I have gotten in here, just with little words, you know, I love you, Carla, or, you know, it didn't matter. You see him saying hello to me. It really helped a lot. Because, you know, you get into that being critical on yourself, you know, thinking, oh, I was even scared to tell my story tonight. Because I ain't been right lately. I feel like I gotta, you know, do it a certain way for y'all. And I know better than that. But I feel that those little voices back here, you know, doing that shit. You gotta do it this way, you gotta do it. Now you gotta be in here. You know, your sober life in 30 minutes now. You can't go on in that drunk log too long. You know that's what everybody's going to be saying because you're one of them. You say that shit. So, you know. And each and every one of us get up here, you know, and we just do it the way it's supposed to be done because I think God talks through us. We sit up here. Anyway, who fucking wants to control a goddamn alcoholic? We all want control. How well meeting supposed to be led? I ain't supposed to be doing it. I shared a meeting one time. I just love it when they have conflict. Because I learned two different ways. You know? I learned all of it. And it, you know, it brings people together one more time. Would it be conflict? If we all agreed, then there wouldn't be shit. It wouldn't be Lambda. If you want a little drama in your life, get on the Roundup or on the bars. And that principles before personality, that'll work the shit out of you. And you'll hear them in meetings. Oh, I've been having this Roundup over. Oh, God. I remember Gerda asked me to be on the committee, be on the Roundup. And that was something I just really didn't want to do. And I was like, Gerda, I like everybody in here. I really don't want to get to know them that well. You know, when you get too close, then we get critical. But, you know, if we're saying, hey, and going out and having coffee, we don't have to know your personal life. You know, like, I don't want to know that shit. Because I do love everybody in here. And I am being honest about that. And I really appreciate everybody in here. More than you guys will ever know. I remember my first year of sobriety, or standing in the circle at the Lord's Prayer and crying. Because it was so overwhelming. I was so scared to go there, and then so glad I was there. So I cried before I got there, and I cried after, but one was sad, and one was happy, you know. And that's the one thing that you don't see me do very much, is cry. I don't do that either. But I have done it in these rooms. And I can come in these rooms, and I don't even have to cry. People know what's wrong with me by the way they look at me. You know? How are you? Well, I'm all right. Get your ass over here. I'm going to talk to you. Jay did that to me one night here not long ago. They know me, you know? And I hate that sometimes. So, I don't know why this person is lost. I feel like I'm lost for words. Who's been talking? Anyway, I want to thank everybody for supporting me tonight.
and all the calls that I got, so y'all going to be here. It's awesome. And, you know, one time in the meeting, old Kevin was sitting in a meeting. I didn't even know him. He turned around that meeting while he was sharing and looked at me and said, "I love you, Carl." I was like, "Okay." Flip me out, you know. And, you know, sometimes it takes a while for the program to grow on you. And you're here. Now, you've got to do a little bit of the work, guys. You know, I'm telling you this stuff, and if you're a newcomer, I don't want you to think everybody's going to come around and carry you around and think, that ain't going to happen. You got to reach out. And you got to be approachable. See, I wasn't approachable when I first got here. So that's why it took a while. And you got to, you know, be around. And you know, and I don't like the word click either, you know. It may appear that there is clicks or whatever, but you know what? They're just alcoholics. And that might be their safe little group or whatever. We all got our shit, okay? And we all got our friends in however way we do it. But go to coffee with them. Hang out. Find somebody. You will find somebody in this room who will match up with you. You know? Whether we look like the tough kind or the real softy kind. Or that ain't me. But I will talk to you. I promise you that. I will talk to you. So, you know, I hope that y'all come and you stay. And thank you again. I appreciate it.
We love you, Carla. Thank you. I'm sorry. I asked Joanne to read how it works, and I forgot to call her up here before, but maybe we'll get you at another meeting. I apologize for that. I've asked Kevin to... Oh, wait. I think Lynette... Kevin, do you want to do the chips, please?
Yes, darling.